John Wayne is held up as an ideal of Christian manhood because he is the good guy with the gun. He will bring order through violence. And there's this idea that, particularly with the rise of feminism and the anti-war movement, this heroic ideal had been lost. And when it was lost, that imperiled the nation and the church, because we needed strong men who were not afraid to do what needed to be done.
Dr. Kristen Comas-Dumais is a history professor at Calvin University and the New York Times bestselling author of Jesus and John Wayne, How White Evangelicals Corrupted a Faith and Fractured a Nation. I'm Umbreen Khan, and you're listening to Inspired. Earlier in this program, Janae Lewis, the CEO of Faith in Public Life, joined me to talk about how this election cycle, her organization has organizers on the ground in Georgia, Ohio, and Florida working to engage faith leaders to address political violence. And that's a growing concern. In October 2023, a poll from the Brookings Institute and PRRI found a significant rise in the number of Americans who believe the following statement. Because things have gotten so far off track, true American patriots may have to resort to violence in order to save our country. When the researchers looked at the role of religion in the responses, they found one group stood out: white evangelical Protestants, with 31% supporting this statement. To better understand the beliefs and ideas about guns, manhood, and views about extrajudicial violence, we are revisiting my 2022 conversation with Dr. Dumais, where she explains sheepdog theology, John Wayne, and much more. As you describe John Wayne as this idealized good guy, keeping us safe, he's the big hero, but he's not the only protector in this narrative. Can you explain references to sheep or sheepdog theology? I don't totally follow, especially because my understanding is that there's a lot of negativity associated with sheep.
So you don't want to be a sheep. And this is not just in kind of conservative religious spaces, but conservative spaces more broadly. It's a term of disparagement. You're just a follower. You're weak. You're not equipped to lead. The sheepdog is something different. That is the dog with sharp teeth that will use its viciousness to counter the viciousness of the wolves in order to protect the flock, in order to protect the vulnerable, usually depicted as women and children in these circles. And so there you need to meet aggression with aggression. And that's very consistent with a kind of longstanding posture in conservative evangelical spaces. Preemptive war is a great example of this. When you lift up these threats that are so great out there, whether they be kind of cultural threats domestically or threats in terms of foreign policy, if you take these threats seriously, why would you wait for them to attack you? You need to act preemptively. You need to strike first. Otherwise, you are simply leaving the fold vulnerable. Hmm. And it's irresponsible.
Is gun ownership in America like a religion?
I think for some people, gun ownership has become like a religion because it's tied to a deeper value system. It's tied to their identity of who they are as Americans, their identity of what they are entitled to, their rights. But it goes deeper than that. This isn't just a Second Amendment issue. This really goes back to power in terms of having access to violent tools in order to defend oneself, to defend one's family, and to defend one's beliefs. And so gun ownership is rooted in this idea of embattlement, that there are forces out there that are a threat to what is good and to what is true. And those forces are not just external in terms of America's enemies, but many of those threats are internal as well. And so we need guns to defend ourselves and to defend what is good and true.
What are those internal forces that you're referring to?
within white evangelicalism, if you go back historically over the last half century or so, we have this kind of culture wars mentality that has developed. And so to be a conservative evangelical isn't just to hold to particular theological positions, things like biblical inerrancy and distinct gender roles and patriarchy and things like that. But it is also to have been shaped by a kind of us versus them culture. The idea that conservative evangelicals are a faithful remnant in many ways, that going back to the 1960s, a lot of Americans kind of went adrift. You had the feminist movement, a threat to traditional family values. You had the anti-war movement. So that was a threat to American strength and American power. And for Southern evangelicals in particular, the civil rights movement was also disruptive of the status quo and of white political and social power.
You're talking about like desegregation of public schools in the 1970s.
Exactly. Yes, desegregation was a very mobilizing issue for many conservative evangelicals, particularly in the South. And the racial order was tied to their understanding of God's social order. So all of these things in the 1960s were incredibly disruptive, whereas in the 1950s, evangelicals really had felt much closer to the center of things. You had Billy Graham in and out of the Eisenhower White House. In the post-war era, family values were all the rage. This was the Leave It to Beaver era. And anti-communism really united a lot of Americans across political difference in this common cause. And so the 1960s just felt incredibly disruptive. And the answer to all of these disruptions really was the assertion of white masculine authority and bringing order to disorder. And what was critical to that was strength, was power, was aggression when necessary. And so this is where the idea of the good guy with the gun comes. There's this idea that particularly with the rise of feminism and the anti-war movement, this heroic ideal had been lost. And when it was lost, that imperiled the nation and the church because we needed strong men who were not afraid to do what needed to be done.
There's a lot of speculation that mass shootings that are particularly horrific are going to change attitudes among those who strongly support gun ownership. I'm curious, based on your research, what do you see happening and what do you anticipate?
I have a 2017 survey that has 41% of white evangelicals owning guns, more white evangelicals owning guns than the average American. But then you have these kind of shared ideals, shared commitments. And so even if a white evangelical doesn't own a gun, they are also going to be more likely to support those who do and defend those who do. And this isn't just a purely theological commitment at all. In fact, it runs counter to a lot of core teachings of the scriptures, things like love your enemies and turn the other cheek. And, you know, you have the story in the New Testament of Jesus telling his disciple Peter to put his sword away. And so you have a lot of evangelical biblical teachings that should run counter to this pro-gun movement. And in fact, you have prominent evangelicals speaking out against gun violence, people like Shane Claiborne, who has for years advocated against gun violence as a white evangelical. But you also have this strong cultural identity that has been cultivated for generations now within white evangelicalism that links guns to responsible Christian manhood. God ordained men to be protectors, protectors and providers. But to be a protector, you need to be willing to resort to violence when necessary. So if you look at James Dobson from Focus on the Family, probably the most prominent evangelical advice giver when it comes to raising children, he's very clear. Gender difference is absolutely critical, and you are messing with God's order, God's design, if you mess with gender roles. And so men are supposed to be protectors, and you have to equip little boys for this. And women, girls are not. They are the vulnerable ones. They are weak. They are to be protected.
In your research, you have taken a closer look at these messages to parents. Can you give me some examples?
If you look at evangelical advice manuals on raising boys, that involves things like, little boys are, of course, even if, you liberals are trying to prevent it, just watch, your little boy's going to make a gun out of a piece of bread, out of a stick. You know, you can't stop this. This is by God's design. And so you should give him BB guns when he's little. And then when he's old enough to handle it, you should teach him how to use real weapons, a rifle. And some of these books have plans like Raising a Modern Day Knight is one of them, put out by Focus on the Family. And
wait, raising a modern day knight.
Raising a Modern Day Knight.
Okay.
Yes. The age of chivalry. We need it. And so maybe the initiation process involves gifting a firearm. So this is just part. Now, not every evangelical family does this, but this is part of what is good and what is right, how boys become men, and what it is to be a Christian man. And the idea that God filled men with testosterone, this is, again, God's design, and testosterone makes men aggressive. But God doesn't make mistakes, so that aggression is good. It just needs to be properly channeled.
When we hear that expression, good guy with a gun, who are we understanding the good guy with the gun to be?
Often the good man with a gun is implicitly understood to be a white man, and the threats to the American family are perceived to be non-white men. So if we look at the 1960s, we see in terms of Black communities seen as a threat, and white families need to protect themselves. This also ties into white evangelical support for maintaining segregation in their Christian academies, and really perceiving Black men in particular as threats. So white men need guns to defend themselves. You see this in terms of discussions around immigration and the dangers that quote-unquote illegal immigrants pose to good American families. And you see that in rhetoric around the threat of Islam. And somebody like James Dobson will present this in the years after 9/11. Muslims are the greatest threat to American families. So fathers, you need to stand up and defend them. Defend your family.
But the majority of terror acts in the United States are committed by white men. Are they seen as a threat?
Despite the statistics, no, I do not see much discourse at all in evangelical spaces about the threat of white gunmen. Instead, I see a lot of support for somebody like Kyle Rittenhouse.
The young man who was acquitted after driving from his home in Kenosha, Wisconsin, to a protest where at the age of 18, he used weapons to shoot and kill protesters who were out marching, raising their voices because of George Floyd's murder in Minneapolis.
Rittenhouse was really perceived in many white evangelical spaces as a noble kid, a kid who stepped up when the adults in the room weren't doing what they needed to do.
I just want to introduce Kyle by saying this. Your number one goal is to protect your family and to stand strong in the face of opposition from culture and evil. And Kyle Rittenhouse is a man who does that. God bless Kyle Rittenhouse.
rather than seeing him as a threat, rather than seeing him as a killer. He was perceived as the good guy with the gun who was coming in to restore order when the government was unable or unwilling to do so. Very much seen as somebody who stood between good citizens and the threat of, in this case, Black Lives Matter protesters.
This week, we are revisiting my conversation with Dr. Kristen Comas-Dume. She's a history professor at Calvin University and the New York Times bestselling author of Jesus and John Wayne. As we get back to the conversation, Dr. Dume dives into how these beliefs were effectively socialized into generations of evangelical culture and how Christian media, especially talk radio in the 20th century, played an outsized role. Kristen, in your book, you spent a lot of time on James Dobson. He's a child psychologist who left his practice at a children's hospital in 1977 to start a radio talk show, Family Talk. That grew into a multimedia empire and attracted a daily listenership that was estimated to reach nearly 200 million around the globe. How did he gain such traction?
Yes, you really need to understand the broader trends within evangelicalism in the last half century or so, which is a real emphasis on Christian living. So what does it mean to live faithfully? And that's where you'll get all kinds of advice on how to raise kids, how to be a good wife, how to be a good dad, how to vote, all sorts of things. And much of this is just through the Christian subculture, through Christian radio, through Christian music, and through this enormous Christian publishing industry. And what they found decades ago was that if you're trying to sell theological treatises, you have a pretty small market niche there, particularly when you get to denominational divisions and Methodists don't like the Baptist theology and vice versa. But if you talk about things like how to be a good wife, you have a huge market right there. And so a lot of what evangelicals are reading, are hearing day in, day out, a lot of evangelicals listen to Christian radio for several hours every single day. They're getting religious content that is not deeply theological, but it is faith-based. And that religious content is going to teach them what they should think about how to raise your kids, about what it means to be a good person, a good American. And you can see these cultural and political values really shaping what it means to be an evangelical. And this is coming through the popular culture, but then also through their pastors who end up being deeply influenced by this popular culture as well. And so when you look at somebody like James Dobson, he's a fascinating figure because he first presented himself when he started Focus on the Family Radio as not political. Even though when you look at his teachings, he was very concerned with authority and propping up parental authority and disciplining children. And he was concerned about these things because he didn't like the hippies. He didn't like what was happening in the 1960s.
So as Dobson emerges, he starts off as this apolitical and but the messaging and the platforms and the issues that he is prioritizing and lifting up are part of a larger political agenda.
Yes, but because he's presenting himself as apolitical, he's drawing in millions of listeners, often conservative evangelical women who are stay-at-home moms and have the radio on all day. And he develops this really strong sense of loyalty. And evangelical women turn to him for parenting advice, for background noise, and increasingly really see him as a religious leader, and not just women, but evangelical men as well. And so years ago, I had heard there was a survey in my own Christian denomination about who was the most important theologian. And that survey turned up James Dobson as the number one theologian. Now, he is not part of my particular denomination, nor, of course, is he a theologian. But that just shows how he came to stand in for theologians as a religious leader. And his teachings were, yes, he would talk about the Bible, but it was very much about how to live this family values evangelicalism. And then increasingly, he became overtly political, telling Christians how they should vote.
And how do guns fit into this?
So guns are just part of the broader kind of worldview and religious understanding that white evangelicals have, that you need to protect your rights. That's where the Second Amendment comes in. But also, you know, not to be placed in danger without defense against all of these domestic threats.
Those domestic threats are not simply kind of stranger violence, but threats from trends and forces, like Yes. You have more immigrants in America, or you have more non-Christians living in America, or the majority of Americans are no longer identifying as religious. Are those cultural trends also seen as internal threats in this construct of vulnerability?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are in the midst of a real demographic shift in this country, which Robert Jones has termed the end of white Christian America. Right? That sounds scary if you think that God destined America to be a special Christian nation. But I also want to note that evangelicals also drink deeply from a more secular conservatism, right? So many evangelicals aren't just tuned into evangelical media, to Christian radio and Christian publishing, but they're also watching Fox News. That has become, for many evangelicals, kind of the reliable news mm-hmm. source. Mm-hmm. And so anything you're seeing on Fox News is also going to deeply shape the evangelical consciousness. And it's able to do so effectively because it does align so tightly with many of their own values.
What do you think needs to happen to get Christians who believe they have a religious right and reason to own a gun? What is going to have to happen to get them into a conversation to talk about what advocates describe as common sense gun laws?
It's going to take other Christians. It's going to take other Christians to speak powerfully and consistently into these spaces. And these are Christians who are already in those spaces, right? Because you do have religious resources on which to draw. The problem is you can quote all kinds of Bible verses. And even when you're talking to self-professed Bible-believing Christians, you know, who swear that they take the inerrancy of the scriptures incredibly seriously, that they hold to the inerrancy of the scriptures, those Bible verses just aren't going to get through. There is a real tension because in Christian teachings, the figure of Jesus Christ, right, and the stories in the New Testament about Jesus present Jesus as the Savior who was willing to lay down his life for others. That is the heart of the gospel teaching. And then Christians are called to follow Christ, to take up their cross and follow him in terms of self-sacrifice. Christians are told that to follow Christ, you need to die to self. You need to give that up to serve others, to love others. And over and over again in the scriptures, we see the words, do not fear, do not be afraid, right? That your hope is elsewhere. And so you should be able to live without fear. What has been absolutely bewildering, I will say, as a Christian in America over these last couple of years, is to see how that faith over fear rhetoric has been employed.
Kristen Comas-Dumé is a New York Times bestselling author. She's a professor of history and gender studies at Calvin University. She holds a PhD from the University of Notre Dame, and her research focuses on the intersection of gender, religion, and politics. Her most recent book is Jesus and John Wayne: How White Evangelicals Corrupted a Faith and Fractured a Nation. That's all for this week's show. If you've not heard, we are shifting our production to podcast only and specials. We deeply appreciate our public radio stations and community partners who've supported bringing this program to communities around the country, from Richmond, Virginia to Ketchikan, Alaska, as I like to say.
I don't take for granted the privilege it has been to be on the air with you. I invite you to continue to be part of our listening community by subscribing to the podcast. Just search Interfaith Voices wherever you listen. And I always want to hear from you. You can reach out at amber@interfaithradio.org. Friends, when Interfaith Voices began more than two decades ago, there were no smartphones or podcasts. Today, our media landscape has changed so dramatically. And so is the way faith and beliefs show up in our world and the way we identify. But one thing has not changed: the critical need for accurate and reliable information to help us make sense of the world and to be curious. I am so grateful to all of you who've joined me over the last 6 years in making this program, from our guests to our producers and interns, including Stephanie Lecce, Melissa Fato, Lauren Marco, Kimberly Winston, Kevin McCarthy, Sam McGuire, Raina Koulibaty, Richard Karmakar, and Jack O'Grady. And a special thanks to our founder, Maureen Fiedler, for her vision. Wherever you are, friends, I hope you are safe, I hope you are well, and I hope you stay connected.